All right, welcome everybody. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us on the Media 1099 podcast. My name is Michael Durr, and I will be joined by my co-host Robert Husky in just a minute. If you're a creative freelancer, we hope this podcast continues to provide you some value, some inspiration during a very challenging year. We want you to know that we're here to help in any small way that we can. If you visit media1099.com, you will be whisked away by our amazing blog posts, episode write-ups, discount codes, and free downloadable PDFs that will help you navigate your freelancing business. Today, we're going to be discussing both large and small-scale economic issues in the country. So Robert and I are going to be diving into some U.S. recession history, what the stock market is telling us, and how we aim to personally handle our household economy amidst all of this. We also plan on posting this episode on our new YouTube channel, which is going to be very exciting. We will link that in our show notes when it's up and ready, so stay tuned for that. Thank you guys again for joining us. We've got a quick sponsor ad coming up, and we'll get right to it. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. It's Mike and Robert from Media 1099, and we are really excited today because we are launching our very first YouTube edition of the podcast. So it's very exciting. Robert, how you doing, bud? How's this setup going for you?
Good, I'm good. I hope everybody kind of goes along for the ride with us on this. And if you are listening, you know, using iTunes or on the road using your phone, sorry, but you guys got to check out the YouTube channel. We'll put a link in the description. You should be able to get a good idea of what we're talking about, but today is a little bit of a visual heavy day. We're going to be showing some graphs, talking about the economy. And we just thought like this is a great spot for us to knock off one of our goals and go in head first, cannonball into video Zoom streams. So it might be a little rough around the edges, but
it'd be a little bit
exciting.
We'll be okay. Be all right.
I think we're good.
So today we're going to be talking a little bit about kind of the economic situation in 2020. Now, the full disclosure, of course, is that we are not financial experts nor economists. If you want advice on what to do with your finances, how to navigate this time, the best recommendation I could probably give you is to simply talk with a CPA, specifically a fiduciary one that has your best interest at heart, as well as legally. So we are just going to give our opinions. We're going to ask some questions. We're going to be talking about what we think is going on in this hellacious year of volatility and unpredictability. So I don't know where you want to take this right off the bat, Robert, but 2020, the first half of the year has been crazy. The second half of the year, what do you think it's going to look like?
Yeah, just double down on your statement is like, don't take advice from people on podcasts or YouTube channels now, you know. But yeah,
you can just get it verified. Just double check with somebody else. It's one thing to take it, but don't just say
with a grain of salt.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone started out thinking 2020 was going to be a pandemic year. Essentially, house arrest and the economy going in shambles. And I think, you know, moving forward to the second half of this year, it's going to be a little bit of like a start and stop and see where we're going. You know, like we've started opening up, you know, states and counties, and then it's like, oh, the numbers are rising. Okay, like we have to close stuff down again. And I think that's just going to happen for the foreseeable future. That's my two cents. Like I said, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a fortune teller, but I think it's going to be like stop, yellow light, green light, red light, like just back and forth. That's my two cents on that.
It's interesting to hear how people visualize this, and economists will, you know, discuss how a recession and a bounce back looks in comparison to like letters. So you've probably heard, is it going to be a V, like where you kind of spikes down, comes right back up? Is it going to be a U, which has like the recession kind of a little bit more pronounced and then comes back up? There's what you're kind of describing is kind of like a W, I would call, where it kind of comes back and then goes back down and might come back up again. I think with my discussions that I've had with my own CPA, we've never articulated it, but to me, it's kind of like, I view it as like a Nike swoosh. So it's just going to, it's coming down, which we already hit, and it's going to be a gradual, slow burn back up, hopefully. I don't think it's going to be a complete L, but
yeah,
it's hard to say at this point.
I mean, I disagree with that. I mean, I just think looking at history, like it's funny how much history repeats and like rhymes with itself. Because if you look at, you know, the roaring 20s, right? And then like the stock market crashed. So like technically things that you can't, that are exactly the same is you can't get a drink in a bar. We have a president who never held public office before, same as Herbert Hoover in the 20s. And then if you look at what happened after the crash, it kind of came back up and then it rolled back over and then there was like a bigger crash. So, okay. I mean, I'm not trying to be like a doomsday prepper or anything, but I just look at a lot of the similarities. And kind of speaking of that, it's just the financial world is really different than like the real economy world that we're living in as freelancers and small business owners. Is, you know, right now the stock market has recovered, quote unquote, like the NASDAQ's higher and all those things. But I feel like the economy, I look at all the local stores, I look at all my freelance work, like it's all shot, you know?
Well, that's what's interesting to me is, I guess I should articulate this a little bit better in the sense that there's this notion to me that the market and the economy can be two different things. Mm-hmm. So like how the stock market is doing doesn't necessarily mean that the economy is booming, right? If it's coming back up. And everybody's personal economy is going to be completely different, which I think we'll go into as well down this this rabbit hole. But it's just interesting how one does not necessarily equate to the other.
Yeah. And kind of just hopping in on that, like there has been, quote unquote, like a lot of what they call helicopter money that has gone to, you know, big businesses, airlines, you know, to hold people employed until September, and then that's going to go down. Mm-hmm. And I do think, like, I don't know if that's right or wrong. Like, there's no left, right. Like, it's all just the American eagle, you know? So, like, you just got to ride what is currently going on. But I think a lot has gone to bigger businesses rather than, like, smaller, quote unquote, main street businesses. And I don't know how you fix that problem, but I just think, you know, if I was like a small business owner on a pizza shop,
yeah,
and these PPP loan programs came out, and it's like, okay, like I'm just looking at the future and I can't really have as many people in my restaurant because I have the social distance. So that's like right. A quarter of the people are in it. So therefore there's like a quarter of profitability, three quarters is gone and I'm already on tight margins. Like, and now I have to take a loan. Like, do I really want to take that loan? Because I still have to pay it back, you know? And I think there's a lot of tough choices going on that are being
a lot of tough choices. I guess we could start right there is, you know, in terms of what to do with the loans in general, the Fed, which I think you have some graphs as well that you wanted to show, but kind of just leapfrogging that a little bit is that, you know, what to do with these loans? Like, is it now the best time to do it? Because the interest rates are relatively low on them and it's trying to drive and stimulate the economy that way. But at the same time, to your point, you still got to pay that back. If your business is not in good shape once we start recovering, then, and you're not going to get the same numbers that you did because your business is still, you may open up, but to your point, it's like you may have 50% capacity at your restaurant because you have to keep everybody spaced out. Maybe you don't have the foyer outside to, like, you know, have outdoor eating. So your business is going to be technically open, but at 20, 30% of the revenue. So you still have to pay that back. That may not be necessarily the best idea. You'd have to really discuss that with somebody that knows your numbers and can forecast as best you can. And I think we're just doing the best that we can to figure out how our businesses look individually as freelancers to figure out whether or not we take those loans as well.
Yeah. I mean, kind of we're in a little bit of a better situation where we don't have a lot of overhead, quote unquote. You know, like we have our websites and like our costs, but we don't have, at least us, we're not renting office space. We don't have employees, you know. It's just our income has drastically, you know, been cut, but it's not, we don't have as many bills still piling on.
I think that's the great feature that we have as freelancers, that you know, we don't have a payroll. We don't have a storefront. Some people might, they might own their own studio, but for a lot of us, that's not compromised. We just have to kind of weather the storm.
Yeah. And I think everybody's making that decision and they're just like, how long is this storm going to last? You know? Right. And what are kind of the consequences of, you know, all this helicopter money or this financial money printing that's going on, not only in like the US, but across the world, because everybody's kind of getting hit by this.
Yeah.
You know, because I'll show some graphs right now, but
yeah.
I feel like everyone's kind of purchasing power is going to go a little bit south, you know, because so much money has been created or printed or digitally made. So for those of you that are listening online, sorry, it's going to get a little bit graph heavy, but okay, so here we go. So if you look at the Federal Reserve's data, you could see that in, you know, 2010, there was like $8,000 billion in the marketplace, and steadily like increased. And then boom, at the start of 2020, it just like skyrockets from 15 to like 18.5, essentially. And that's a drastic increase of money, of what they call M2 money, which is people's money in their checking accounts, savings accounts, what people put in the stock market under their mattress. It's just kind of what the money in the US economic system is. And if you look from 2008, which was like the great financial crisis, it was $8.34. And now it's almost at 18.5. So it's pretty much more than doubled. And what that does to your money is, if there's double the money and you still only have that same $1 or $5 or $10 bill, like your purchasing power goes down. Mm-hmm. And that's like what, if you talk to macro economics professors, people on CNBC, whatever, they're really concerned about what is that going to do to, you know, the normal everyday person that's working 9 to 5, that's not a millionaire, billionaire, because that's a real loss of money. You know, you don't feel it. I mean, you don't see it, but it slowly eats away at you.
Right. What do you think in terms of like, what sector of the economy or what sector of the workforce is really going to bounce back or is booming now versus what's really suffering?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like anything outdoors. I was having this conversation with a friend and we were just trying to figure out, you know, like we were trying to put together a marketing team, I guess, in a sense, where we create content and he works on social media. And we're like, what, you know, one, I feel like everybody needs to have like mask content or open space content nowadays. But then again, I feel like everyone's budget is just constricted. You know, it's that of like, yeah, I'm not going to have an advertising budget because I can't pay my bills, which is fair enough. But to your question, I was like, okay, what could, like, who is a potential market, you know? And I was like, right. golf courses, you know, because like you're outside, there's a lot of space. You know, I think like kind of escape places like bungee jumping, hiking outdoors, like places like that. I think people, one, are cooped up in their house, you know, and they just, you need to get out, you need to get some sunshine, some breeze, and you have the ability to kind of stay socially distant from each other.
It's tricky. I mean, do you have like a vision in terms of, let's say, photographically, you know, I do a lot of events, you work with colleges. I mean, these require mass amounts of people. It's hard to cover those things. Those are obviously going to take a nosedive to some degree. What do you think is peaking? What do you think is, what avenues out there are ripe for the picking?
Honestly, like I don't know. I don't really know.
It's a tough one. I don't mean to like throw you on the spot. It's just like, I don't either. I would say, and I think about this where, if you're a wedding photographer, I think elopements are probably picking up, weddings not so much, which, you know, you're not going to make as much being an elopement photographer as you would a wedding photographer, but that is when one kind of door shuts, maybe one opens, that's a possibility. It's just, it's really an interesting time. I think B2B is going to be tough for a little while.
Yeah.
But if you're B2C, if you're doing, you know, family work, if you're doing portraits, if you're doing elopements, that as a possibility of coming back. But B2B is tough for me to envision kind of taking a huge surge up in the short term. You know, I think, like I said, I think it's going to be further down.
Yeah. I mean, I think people now are going to see, like, one, I think people's habits have changed, you know, like they talk about when the Great Depression happened, people saved money differently or they changed their lifestyle because it was like, it was a very life altering, event or series of events. And I think people have really changed how they shop. You know, I think Amazon is just going to go through the roof even more than it currently is. And I think people have gotten used to ordering online, getting stuff delivered to your house or going to Target and getting it put in the back of your truck. So I think like a lot of digital space is going to expand.
Yeah, right. Online.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for creatives, you know, like you have to realize that like everyone's moving online. Like if you can't do something physically in space, like, okay, start that YouTube channel that you've really been lagging on, or start that podcast. Because like you have to start finding alternate revenue streams, you know, and that's become even more evident as it is than it was like a year ago, you know, when business was booming.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's just like, oh, okay, like this reality is the norm, you know, like at least for the next couple of years, I think everyone's kind of going to be saving their money a little bit more cautious of like what they're spending on. And I think they're going to look for entertainment that, or like information that's online or quote unquote free, which you only have to watch through one or two ads to get to.
What's interesting to me is this space of how our mindset, our psychology is being affected by the coronavirus, by the 2020 just recession. You know, back in the 20s, I mean, I think that had a generational impact, meaning like those people that went through that, their grandkids grew up with the same mentality that their grandparents did, like holding on to your money, not borrowing money, not going into debt. You know, those things kind of stayed for a while. What's happened now is that the technology exceeds the pace. Like it just, every 5 years, it feels like we're in a different world than we were just before.
Yeah.
So I think that accelerates our mindsets in a way. So that if we're going in through something right now, and parents and people that are our age or what have you are building this entrenched ideology of, okay, we got to hold into our money, kind of that old school style, you know, it doesn't take long for us to get back out of that mentality and go back to, well, things are picking up, I'm just going to buy a lot of stuff again. And so I'm interested to see if it has any lasting generational impact of how this hits us. And I guess it depends on how long it lasts. If this lasts 2 years, you better believe that our kids are going to have some sort of ideology that they inherit from us based off of these events.
And
we've already gone through it twice.
Yeah. And kind of hopping onto that, I'm going to share the screen again, is looking at the U.S. Savings rate. You know, so for those of you listening on podcast, for since 2015, the savings rate has kind of jumped up and down between like 6.5% to about 8-9%, being the highest at the tail end of the financial crisis in 2008, and then also in October. And then you look at the start of the year, of talking about like life-changing events, you know, it shoots up to 12% and then 32% in April, you know, and that's when I think everyone realized like, oh, this is real. You know, like the NBA canceled their season. People really started getting in lockdowns, and it's gone down a little bit to about 23% currently, or from in April when they last had the last statistics. But I do think this number is going to stay relatively high. You know, I think it's one of those things of like, you look around and, you know, we kind of have discussions ourselves about how unique people are, and how I kind of think everyone's more similar. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you could see the statistics of like, yeah, everybody turned into a saver. You know, people realize this might last a while.
Yeah. And just to clarify on those numbers, those are the percentages of people saving money, or is that, how is that calculated there?
Okay. Sorry. So that is the percent of income that people are saving. So it's
okay.
Not,
gotcha.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So let me rephrase that. So it's before this crisis, people were saving roughly 7-8%.
Gotcha. Okay.
And now people are saving 32% of their income, 25% of their income.
Okay. So that's pretty staggering. That's a huge spike up.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah. And that's going to play a role, you know, because that's just for personal savings or individuals, but that's going to reflect into the business environment. You know, like it was easy to spend money when everybody was making money. You know, you have a lot of money coming in, And I think the reality now is people are kind of afraid of like, do I really need this? Like people are going to be thinking twice or thrice on spending something that isn't a bill or isn't mandatory, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. Because that went from what, 7 to like 37?
Yeah.
Something like that. So that's a 30%, like everybody's going to feel that, like where, oh yeah, the circulation of money coming into the market, like that's from organically, right? Like, you know, not from the Fed. That's crazy.
Yeah. And kind of one more graph to kind of hop on, because people are saving, the Fed right now is really trying to figure out, you know, how do we get people to spend? You know, so if you looking at this graph from the Fred, is early 2008, you know, the velocity of money. And for those listening online that can't see or listen to the podcast, before 2008, it was almost at like 2%. So that's saying if you spend a dollar buying a hot dog, then that person's going to recycle that money and buy buns. And then the person at the bun factory is going to buy new equipment. And like the money just keeps going. And it slowly has been on the decline. And right now we're at like 1.3. So that means that people are no longer, when they get money, they're saving it. They're putting it in their mattress, in their banks, in the stock market. Like it's not contributing to repurchasing power of other people.
Right. Right. And can you verify that that's what you've been doing too? Have you noticed your own personal actions reflect that chart, or have you been no different than what it was before?
Oh yeah, no, I've definitely, I mean, I think I'm not trying to say like I was like ahead of the curve or whatever, but I saw this going on in China and I was like, oh, like this, like flights are still coming out and it's just, it's inevitable. Like in the modern world where people are traveling across the globe, like it's going to spread. Right. And I was like, okay, like it's time to hunker down, you know, take care of all the bills, kind of start seeing where we could cut our expenses, you know, and from a personal point of view, like we cut what we could, you know, and then on a business, like, okay, I took off my accounting software because I'm like, okay, like I don't, it's nice to have, but yeah. I'll take the extra hours a week and get that done myself.
You're not sending invoices for, you know, this stretch of time, like realistically, right? Like you're not, I did not cancel mine, not to interrupt you, but like, yeah, like I didn't cancel mine. I just negotiated a rate. Kind of like the way that you would with your gym and say like, hey, like you're not charging me for these 4 months or whatever.
Yeah. And then speaking of like gym, like I canceled, I had a 24 hour, I had like some deal where I went through Costco and got like a better deal. And they refunded me for, I was surprised they refunded me for like the entire time that I bought it for. Yeah. Not just like the remaining three quarters. So I got like a quarter of a year free. And I think it was just like, okay, like this is going to be a long time and I think it's going to affect a lot of businesses. And then, yeah, sure enough, like we started getting phone calls for canceling appointments, canceling stuff. How about you? You know, did you start adjusting yourself accordingly or your business or personal finances?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, it had been going down that road for a little while now because I was heavily in debt before. And so I had been kind of living like a hermit for a while. And you and I have talked a number of times about just like living small. When you don't have quite the income or if you have something that's really going out like debt, it becomes important to live that way. So I think it's going to be interesting for people that don't have that mentality now where they like to live large, which is totally fine. It's just not how I live my life. But for some people, it's a difficult transition. They have to go to their restaurants. They have to go out and take their vacations. They have to buy the equipment. They have to do these things. That's a tough transition for them. So hopefully they can figure that out. For me, it was relatively easy. I think overall, I was a little bit tighter. I mean, I don't think we've been in this how many months now? I don't think Dina or I have ordered food from a restaurant any more than 5 times in however really many impressive. Months.
Yeah.
So it's like I've cooked like 100-something meals. I don't know how many meals I've made, but it's a lot.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think I kind of want to harp on your living small and kind of like paying off the debt because one, I definitely saw some of my friends, colleagues, people I follow on Instagram, like that were posting lavish lifestyle pics and, you know, all those things. And it's just like, yo, they all disappeared. You know, it's interesting seeing the trend of that.
Oh, so they were living a certain way and then all of a sudden this hit and it's like, where are your fancy pictures? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know if they were living that or Instagram living it, you know, but it seems like it's definitely dropped off a cliff.
I think it forces us to look at the way that we're spending our money.
Yeah.
Which is one of the quickest things that we can do to address these situations, because it's like, okay, well, you don't have as much money coming in. Maybe you've lost your job. Maybe you've gotten furloughed. Maybe you have unemployment, but it's a fraction of what you normally make. There's a lot of areas here that were compromised, or maybe it's just not growing the way that you want to. And so the quickest way right there is, you know, cutting some of the expenses. You know, and sometimes I think it needs to be done. So even small things like, yeah, do you need 5 streaming platforms? You know, cut those down. It's like a little bit here, a little bit there. It adds up.
Yeah. And also I think, you know, that people now are like stuck at home. You know, there's really sports are barely getting back into the picture. But it's interesting watching the numbers on in the stock market. You know, I don't know if you follow, you know, the stock market too much, but Robinhood and like Webull and all these apps, people have been jumping on, you know, because I think it's like a natural progression of things or natural thought process. Like I had it myself where I was like, okay, like my freelance work has gone to like zero, you know, like I've like practically nothing. And I was like, okay, like shit, how long are we going to be in this? I don't know for how long. Okay, what's always open? Like, how can I make money? I was like, oh, the stock market's open, you know, 5 days a week except holidays.
Right.
And I was like, okay, like, cool. I could do that. Like, let me do some research. Let me do some digging into it. And, you know, of course, like with anything, you just go down a rabbit hole and you start looking at these numbers of people that are joining up, you know, and it's like, it goes back to like the 1920s repeat history is like when the shoeshine boys telling you what stocks to buy, like it's time to get out. You know? And I think right now everybody is just like, oh, stock market, stock market, stock market. Like it's recovered. I think everyone got really involved in watching it crash and have like seen the recovery of it so far. And everyone's hopping in because, you know, FOMO, like fear of missing out. Everyone's talking about it. You don't want to miss out. You want to make money. You have to make money. You know, right.
I think that's a huge motivating factor for people playing stock market. I talked to one of my good friends who's also a photographer about this, where we were talking about, you know, killing off debt and versus investing. And he was in debt, but still had to invest because of the fear of missing out. Like there was like while the iron's hot, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't personally follow the stock market. I know I should, and I probably will start to, but I don't do a whole lot of that. I'm very much more on the kind of ground level, like take care of your personal economics and, you know, the smaller scale stuff. But what have you noticed of the behavioral aspect of like people just grab, like they're launching their money into, you know, Robinhood and what have you, gold, silver, what's going on?
Yeah, I think there's this really great website called like Robinhood Tracker or Robinhood Trends, and it tracks like the most accounts people are hopping into, you know, and right now everybody's like, you know, stonks, like everything has to go up. And people, I think right now a lot of people, one, are replacing their gambling on sports or viewership with the stock market. Like, sure. I think there's just like, there's adrenaline into it. It's gambling if you want to look at it one way, but like, it's that same psychology going on in your head. And I think now there's a lot of places that are like free commission, so it doesn't cost money to make trades.
Right.
You know, and a warning is like, if something's free, like you're the product, you know, like Facebook is free because they sell your data. Like Robinhood is free because they sell your data. Now you could do this on your cell phone, you know? So like you're waiting for the bus stop or, you know, waiting for lunch and like, oh, okay. Like I'll buy these stocks.
Very accessible. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very accessible. Opening up, you know, market to millennials, Gen Zers that are over 18, you know, even like younger, even though it's not legal.
The entry level is easier. Like, I mean, it's so fast. I set up an Acorns account in like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's like, boom, there you go. And it's like, it just takes those roundups. Do you time the market? Is that what you're, do you try to do that?
I mean, I don't think anyone could officially like time the market.
But do you try to?
Yeah, I do what's called like swing trading, you know, like, cause there's people that are like buy and hold for forever. You know, like you buy on down days and like the market's always going to go up and down and you kind of just hold out. My two cents on that is look at long-term trends of going back to like great crashes, you know, it's boom 29. Like if you would have bought in right there, it's going to take you 50 years to break even, you know,
right.
And that's not counting for inflation, you know? So like, even though the number is, you know, if you, let's say you dropped in $5,000 and then 50 years later, you got that $5,000 back, like your purchasing power isn't the same, you know?
Correct.
So granted, like I wasn't as involved when this first pandemic started, but I took a lot of time to like realize like, okay, like this is like, what are people that are making like massive amounts of money? Like, what are they doing? You know, like, and how do I emulate that? And I'm not trying to be like a market wizard. I'm just like, okay, like the financial world, stocks, equities, all is way different than the real world that I'm currently living in, you know? So if I have some excess capital, like, okay, let's try to put this together. And then going back to like your original question of what have I noticed is another thing of all these people hopping in with Robinhood is the recent, you know, like $600 unemployment check. I've been reading and seeing a lot of articles that because like if people have received that, which is neither right, wrong here nor there, I'm not arguing that, is they haven't earned that money. So like spending it in the stock market feels different. Like you don't have that connection of like, okay, how much did the $600, how many hours of work did it cost me? Like, so there's a different mental attachment to that.
Sure.
So it's a lot easier to throw that into the stock market, you know?
That's a good point. It's, you have not either, I try not to equate it in terms of hours worked. I tend to see it as value provided, but either which way, it's the same thing. It's like, you have not provided value to gain that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think psychologically that has an impact of like, well, it's like house money.
Yeah.
Right. Is that kind of how you're seeing it?
Yeah, I definitely think that. Plus like going back to people are stuck at home, they can't watch, bet on sports. And also, you know, I think a lot of people have this, rightfully so, this concept that, okay, like everyone's holding money and saving money and there's all this money being printed, you know, so like my purchasing power is going down, but they're seeing the stock market go up and they're like, how is this? Like, it doesn't make sense, you know? And I think a lot of the money that has gone into, you know, the recovery, quote unquote, has gone into the stock market. So like, because it's a way to hedge against inflation, you know, because let's say you buy stock in Coke, right? I'm not saying buy in Coke or anything, like, don't listen to me. I'm not a stock broker or anything. But if the price of a Coke, a six pack of Coke goes up, you know, doubles in price, like the stock is going to double in price. And because they're bringing in more revenue, it's not necessarily that that stock is more valuable, but on paper, like, and if it was $50 before and now it's $100, like it, your money kind of goes with inflation. And I think current Fed policy, bank policy, where you're getting, you know, 2%, 1%, 0%, if you're holding on to your money, that's not going to keep up with inflation, you know? So it's forcing people to put money into the stock market. When
right.
I'm not fully aware or like, I'm new to this too. So like, I'm not
pitching
like I'm anything, but it's just,
I hear you.
I think people are dumping it in there, seeing it constantly go up and thinking that the Fed will just print money whenever it dips down 5%, you know?
Yeah. I think we started to see this even before the pandemic hit is maybe it was a result of that just in preparation in a lot of ways, but you know, I started to see interest rates on savings accounts being cut in half. Like consistently, where they had maintained a good percentage for a while, at least staving off inflation rates at 3%, then became 2.2%, and then 1.7%, and 1.5%. Now it's like down to under 1% and going to be negative very soon. So I think they started to see that happen. That's not to, in my estimation, it does de-incentivize saving money, but I still save money. Like it's pumping a bunch of money into, you know, and then slashing interest rates does not mean like, oh, now I'm just going to go borrow stuff and spend it. Yeah. I think you just have to like be aware of what your financial standings are and see if it's the right thing to do. It just goes back to buying assets, buying liabilities. It's like, what's the smart play here?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, we've been talking like really like macro, big picture, economic right. picture. And I think it's important. Like I've realized, you know, because I have a lot of time at home and I'm like, okay, like what YouTube rabbit hole or what books can I go down to like mm-hmm. get this knowledge? Because I think we tend to focus like as freelancers is like, what is our market? What is our niche? What is, how do we improve our business? And it's like, yes, that's very important, but you also have to see the ebb and flow of like things that are out of your control. And going back to your point of like interest rates being so low and you seeing the value of saving, like if you're in debt, you know, and you're paying an APR rate of 15, 20%, you know, like if you pay off that debt, you're going to get a better return than if it's in the stock market. Like, you know, standard S&P 7, 8% a year is like the historical average,
right.
you know? So in my opinion, it's worth it to pay off your debt because you're going to make double what your return is going to be. Yeah. And there's less risk because it's like, yeah, it's just less of a number. And there's, I'm sure you feel it, you know, when you pay off your last bills, your last debt, it's just like, oh, I'm free. Like there's some freedom in that, you know,
somehow like, you know, you can feel like you're winning, even if your income is now being compromised. Like the fact that you don't have anything that's like seeping money out of your pocket is huge. And I think you're absolutely right. Like the best way to do this is to just to visualize. So people that are like, and I was guilty of this before. And the question would be, you know, should I be holding on to my money right now and not paying off the debts because I have to save for this potential emergency or having something? And it's great to have an emergency fund. I'm a huge proponent of that. But, you know, just understand that the growth factor of your money in your savings account at, if you're at Bank of America or Wells Fargo, sorry guys, you're at 0.01%. That's no growth at all.
Yeah.
Even if you're at a high-end interest savings account, it might be 1% at this point. Used to be higher, but now not so much. That has nowhere compared to the 15 to 25% APR that's on your credit cards or your car loan or God knows what, you know, you have. Yeah, student loans at the very least are going to be in the 5% range. So there's a lot there where you just do the math. It's like, how much is this worth it to save this money? It's like your return on investment is immediate if you kill off the debts. So I would completely agree. But, you know, at the same time, of course, as we've been saying all episode, you know, do whatever you want, but you know, that's food for thought there.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just looking back at interest rates, you know, in the '80s, it was like 15%. So like you could make money saving, you know, and
yeah, exactly.
It's not that way. You know, you lose money slowly but surely.
And I wanted to kind of address too, like what you're currently doing, which is spending a lot of time reading and researching and watching YouTube videos. And I do think that there's value on the internet. Like it, you know, you just like our podcast, you take it with a grain of salt, you know, so consult professionals, but understand that there are people that have some expertise and you can listen and you can learn some things. And when you're spending this much time, with money, because you engage with money your whole life, that's never going to escape you. You're going to buy things, you're going to make money, you're going to engage with debt and investments. So you might as well learn a little bit of it. And don't be ashamed if you aren't grasping it. Like some of these concepts are pretty tough. Like I'm not very good at it. It takes me significantly longer to grasp financial concepts than somebody else would. That might take them, you know, 30 minutes reading something, and it might take me like 3 years, like legitimately.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm really risk averse. Like I like to view my life from like a defensive goalie position. It's like, okay, like let's just keep everything in front of me. Like what's going here? Like I'm very defensive. I feel like you're more of like the offensive player. And so because of that, like anytime I'll watch something on YouTube and they're like, okay, you should be doing this, blah, 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 I try to find like, okay, why shouldn't I be doing that? You know,
which is another great thing. So if somebody's going to say one thing, it's like find the counterpoint. Exactly.
And sometimes like it's paralysis by analysis, you know, like it's just, but it's like, hey, I have the time, I think. And like you're saying, like, you know, we have a long life in front of us where money is constantly going to be involved, you know, and kind of just shift gears from your small not your small, but like your immediate focus in your business into like a bigger scheme of things.
Exactly. I was going to ask you, do you think in terms of retirement, this is for people my age, for people that are, you know, shortly out of college, I think it's something that you start thinking about in your mid 20s. Mm-hmm. It's about retirement. What have you heard about 401ks, IRAs? Are they, I read an article where it's like, maybe it's not so much worth it right now at this point, but you know, like anything, you can find a counter to that the opposite way. Do you have any opinion on, should people keep course investing into their retirement in that regard, or are there alternatives there?
Yeah. Okay. So I know we've said this once and I'll say it a million times. Like, I am not a financial planner. Don't take your advice, word for word from somebody over the internet. But, some of the arguments with like 401ks are that like, you don't have control, you know, is like, it goes into like some random fund, like an S&P 500 ETF and you can't really pull it out. You know, the benefit of that is if you're working a 9-to-5, it doesn't really account too much to freelancers because, you know, we don't have anyone matching a 401k.
Correct.
But if someone is, you know, if you're working for a company and they're like, oh yeah, we'll match 3%, 5%,
yeah,
like do it because it's free money. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Like 3-5%, like it's dumb not to. Also, like there's some tax benefits. But when it comes to retirement, I am a firm believer that taxes are only going to go up, especially now with the economic situation that America's in. Like, it's just inevitable that taxes are going to go up. And because of that, you know, taxes right now on income are relatively low, relatively speaking. It seems like freelancers get the worst of both worlds because we have to pay like self-employment tax and everything. But because of that, I'm a big fan of Roth IRAs compared to regular IRAs, because Roths, you pay the tax up front. Mm-hmm. And then when you pull it out, you know, 30 years, whenever, 50 years, like it's, the taxes are done. Whatever number is there is yours. And also it gives you the flexibility of, because you've paid the taxes on it, you could take the money that you've input, not the profits. So if you've dropped $5,000 in a Roth, you know, every year, and then you're like, oh, hey, I'm kind of hurting right now, you could take out that $5,000 and just like, there's no tax consequences.
Right. You know?
That's kind of my two cents, because like, it's important, you know, it's important to start thinking about those things.
I think it's important to start thinking about it, you know, in high school, honestly, like, you know, college for sure. Like, it's something that I didn't really start thinking about until it was later, which is, you know, you live with some regrets. It is what it is, but you know, better to start now than later. I will say that I think that you would want to discuss with somebody that's qualified, that knows your numbers and your situation and your economic standing, what sequence is the best for you. You know, if you are really strapped for cash, you're going to have to figure out like, where do we put the money in? And if you can automate things, that would be even better. I would recommend that, like, you know, for some people, they love to be very much in on stocks and trading and everything. For the majority of people that don't have the time or don't have the energy capacity to research this stuff, I would automate. I think automating is a guaranteed way to kind of get the ball rolling, because otherwise you're not going to invest into anything. If you just say, hey, I'll do it today, and then the next day. And in fact, like, I have, you know, a quote from this book here, which is called The Latte Factor by David Bach. This is kind of awesome to me about the power of automation. And I'll just read this little excerpt for you. And it goes to, up until World War II, all us good Americans collected our paychecks in full and didn't pay Uncle Sam his chunk till the following year. The problem was, all us good Americans didn't plan so well. We didn't budget. So they tried spending a bunch of campaigns to teach us how to budget so we could pay our taxes. And son of a gun, that didn't work either. So Uncle Sam said the heck with it and set up a simple system that pulled out his chunk automatically. Every time we earned a dollar, Uncle Sam got paid first. So the lesson to that is basically pay yourself first. So if that means your retirement, if you can automate that, it eliminates the natural like forgetfulness or what have you of human beings, like our own human error. It takes that out of it because it's like automatically going right there. So if it's starting off small, that 5%, cool. If you make more money, the more aggressive you can get with everything. So you can put in 15, 20%, 30%. But if you're making low income, you're going to keep it small. But the fact that you can do it first is huge. It's not my advice to you. It's just something that I would say from my perspective is a very transformative principle.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this book, The Richest Man in Babylon. Like if you have time, read that book. You could find it probably on YouTube, like for free, just someone reading it. But he, in that book, it talks about, you know, paying yourself first and like saving 10%. And like now with automation, like in, I know like with Wells Fargo, they take out any deposit that you put in, they could take out a certain percentage.
Right.
And it's just like, and you don't even think about it. It's just like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
It's just in some random savings account or, you know, if you want to go stocks or whatever, like just start that system first of saving for a nest egg and just watching that slowly grow. And while you're doing that, if you don't want to get involved in like stocks, like it's neither here nor there, but I would say do some research on YouTube or just swing trades, like learn what that means, do some research on that, where like you could do stuff where you're looking at it on a week, once every Friday, you know, and just seeing like where the market is, or you could go by an hour or like 4 hours, like, because everyone's lifestyle is different. But I do think having that knowledge is very valuable, you know? And I feel like we're kind of beating a dead horse here, but like just expanding other revenue streams, you know, like as freelancers, the market's going to ebb and flow, you know? So this, although quote unquote, isn't necessarily passive, like it is another way to potentially see some income growth.
And to add on to that, I would classify, there is another term which everybody's heard, which is diversification. So your portfolio, it would be rare to find somebody that's saying a diverse portfolio is bad. For the majority of parts, any financial expert is probably going to tell you to some degree that is a good strategy for the majority of people, unless you're an expert at one thing and you can double down on something. But for the most part, you know, invest in this, invest in that, you know, you have a bunch of different areas so that you're not all in one thing.
Yeah. No, I think that's definitely smart advice. And also kind of backing it back up into taxes, you know, like I do think, you know, eventually taxes are going to have to go back up. It's relatively
low. I think so.
You look at the amount of money that the Fed is printing, and we pay for that, you know, that's our tax, that's bonds and debt. So I think just for the future, like, and since we're talking about macro, like be prepared for that, you know, realize that that's another thing that you're going to have to account for when you're writing up your invoices or quotes, you know, is taxes are going to go back up. So
yeah,
be aware for that. Also, inflation might go back up relatively soon. You know, right now people aren't spending money, so inflation is staying low. But when the tail end of this, you know, things start to seem like they're recovering, you know, maybe, I don't know, I'm not a fortune teller, but if within a year, 2 years, whatever, like they start to recover, like inflation is going to happen because there's a lot more digital money out there. So realize that, you know, your supplies are going to be more expensive. The gas is probably going to be more expensive, whatever, like food for your clients or your assistants is going to be more expensive. So just be aware of that when you're writing your quotes and invoices. And there might be some pushback, but like you have to be firm in your statistics and your knowledge of like what your budget is, because if you're not adequately prepared for that, you might put out the same invoice and then you're making less profit because of taxes and because of additional costs.
Exactly. Kind of jumping on what you just talked about with digital money, do you think that the economy is going to go cashless?
I mean, I don't think fully. And also like the paranoid American citizen in me, like would really hate to see that happen. You know, just because, I mean, one, I think there's a big push right now because people don't like to handle money, you know, because it's like, I don't know where that's touched. And that's, exactly. That's very reasonable. Like I don't want to handle cash as much as possible. And also now debit cards and credit cards are really safe, really effective. They have like the tap and go, Square's taken off, PayPal. So I mean, I think it's just going to go further and further towards digital, but I think there will always be some type of hard currency, whether that's gold, silver.
I agree. I mean, it just got me thinking about that because I know that there have been talks about that. And I remember seeing that there were some before quarantine, there were businesses that actually went cashless to the support of many and then to the chagrin of many. So I think it's going to always, there's always going to be currency. There's always going to be some sort of hard form. But the movement towards digital pay, I think it's not going anywhere. That's going to accelerate even more. I am curious, you know, now is a good time at this point in the year to do a financial, like kind of audit of your situation or an assessment, if you will. What do you think? Is that something that you've done? I'm not asking you to recommend to people, but like, you know, do you have any plans of sitting down and looking at your finances and what kind of finances do you look at?
Yeah. I'd say like every quarter I will take a look just because, you know, we have to pay taxes every quarter, being freelancers. So there's something simple and just like, okay, like I have to write a check. So I might as well just look at like what I've spent, what I've brought in. Now I don't have my accounting software, so I have to like physically do it, which is in some way that's very,
sometimes can be nice.
Yeah. It's very, I want to say soothing, but it really drives home the point of like, oh, like I did kind of waste a lot of money on maybe like Red Bulls or whatever, because like you have to physically write down your expenses. But at this point of the year, like it's just me personally, I'm in lockdown save mode. You know, like my budget, because of my income, it has been slashed, is very much, I feel like a lot of American citizens right now, it's just like, let's just keep the water out of the boat and let's just keep floating and see where this is going to go. And that might not be the right mentality, you know, but like I've been in contact with my clients and just been back and forth. So it's not like I'm totally falling off the wagon, but it's just like the reality of the situation is no one knows what the reality of the situation is. So.
Yeah. I mean, I would say for the most part to jump on what you talked about with the quarterly taxes, I think that's something that a lot of freelancers might be interested in too, because, you know, we just hit our second or quarter two, technically deadline, or quarter one, they pushed it. In any case, I would still recommend, and I guess I shouldn't say recommend, I would rather pay my quarterly taxes still during this time.
Oh, yeah.
Because again, kind of to that notion of holding on to every dollar that you can, if you can control it, why wouldn't you? Like your fees and penalties for not paying them, you know, why bother even going down that road for me?
Yeah.
But if you do want to hoard your money just so that you have it just to pay your rent or whatever, you know, that's your call as well. I do think that, you know, this is tough because, we're hitting some bumpy roads here. You know, we got the $600 unemployment that you talked about a little while ago. That's going to run out at the end of the month. And here's a little data from the U.S. Census Bureau. They showed that how most recent household surveys found that nearly 1 in 5 renters, which equates to roughly 14 million renters, either didn't pay the rent last month at all or delayed their payment. So these are households that are in serious risk of eviction if moratoriums expire. So I just wanted to kind of address, like, you know, sometimes the math doesn't necessarily work out. This is why I'm trying to preface as many times as possible that I'm not recommending. It's just, this is what I would do. But if your situation is dire and you are, it's either, you know, pay quarterly taxes or get evicted, like, obviously I would say, you know, like pay your rent and ignore the quarterly taxes. But you're going to have to determine that for yourself. I think everybody's in a different like situation, which is why it's hard to talk about this stuff and just say, hey, here's what you got to do.
Yeah. And also, you know, because we're on like this big picture thing, like when that $600 stimulus check runs out, you know, that's going to have psychological effects with business owners or people that, you know, spend money at businesses, as well as the rent and mortgage moratoriums. Like that's going to have effects on the economy, you know, and that's out of your control. You know, like if you're one person and you're still paying your rent, like, and you're still paying your mortgage, like you're not going to stop that avalanche of other people not being able to. Mm-hmm. You know, so just be aware that, yes, your financial situation might be different than other people's, but you're one person in a continent of people or in the world that is going through this great pandemic. So just keep that in the back of your mind as well. You know, like it might be going swell for you, but if no one, it's that like downward spiral loop of like no one's spending money, then no one's hiring, then those people that aren't having jobs aren't spending mm-hmm. money, and it just keeps going down and down. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but just be aware of like potential domino effects moving forward.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, we're coming into this point now where we're going to have an election in November. And this isn't political. It's just more, I suppose, what I would want to advise people is just a little bit of perspective on, you know, making sure that your economy, your personal economy, takes precedence over what happens in the Oval Office to some degree. And I understand this is going to be a very impassioned election. Whoever gets into office or retains office, I think you have more control over what happens to your finances than that person will. And I understand, like, yes, it's going to have an impact in terms of the tax rates and the student loan debts and, you know, the workforce and driving the middle class. There's a lot of areas, Medicare, there's a lot of areas there that are going to impact you. But I want to empower people to realize that, you know, I've had great financial situations and horrible financial situations. Neither one of them were impacted because of the president, really, yeah. Or who's in office. So it was really based off of my lack of education and my gaining of education. I would wrap that up in a tidy bow and say that financial illiteracy is the number one economic crisis in the world. And if you view it that way, and I can't prove that, of course, but if you view it from that lens, then you know that the power is in your hands, not somebody else's hands.
Yeah. And, you know? I mean, definitely everybody controls their own destiny. And yeah, and also like just this being said, going into an election year, trying to not keep it political is, I mean, I think both parties, this is me speaking as like an American, that's a tradition of not trusting your government, is I think both parties are trying to do what they can to win what they need to, you know, like, so numbers are going to be manipulated one way or the other. Like we have to make numbers bad before November, or we have to make numbers great until November, you know? So I think that's just my two cents of being like a paranoid citizen, but just know that like, who knows, like, and I like your point of not putting too much of your bread into that basket and just be self-sufficient and know what your income and outcome is going to be, because that's going to affect you, you know, your financial ability and also like just your ability to be in the moment. Like if you're constantly worried about money, like that's going to drive your thought process, your health, you know. But if you have a game plan and a budget and you're able to maintain that budget and have a safety net, like that will help you sleep better and that will help you perform business opportunities better.
Do you use a budget, or have you kind of just, you're just so tight that it doesn't really matter that you have a budget?
I tend to be kind of cheap, you know, but in a good way. Like I'm cheap in things that, like, I don't know, like I don't have a TV in my house, you know, so like I don't pay for cable because I think I feel like cable is, you're paying to waste your time. And so it's a bad investment. Mm-hmm. But on things that like I care about, like I'll spend good money on, you know.
Right.
But I definitely have a budget. I use Mint. This isn't a promotion for them. I just use them. I think their software is great. You could put your bank accounts onto it and they track everything from rent to groceries to fast food. And it's very visual. Like I'm a visual person. So it shows you, you know, what your net income is, or if you've lost money for the month, or what your trends are. And honestly, like it's great. It's because before, when people say, like, oh, do you budget? You think like, you know, you're bringing out the pen and paper. This, dude, just put your accounts into it. It's real. I mean, right. I don't think they've gotten hacked, you know, who knows, but it just visually pops everything out and you don't have to do anything. And it's great.
Right. I think it's such a great skill to have. It's a basic skill, but to zero out a budget and understand what that actually means and how to execute it, I think can really help you hit certain financial goals. Now, if you're making a surplus of money, it's pretty good any which way, if you're in debt or if you're having a surplus, but it's hard to sustain for a long term. Like I will be the first one to admit, I hate doing budgets for every month, and I haven't done it for a while because I believe that my system of paying myself first and then bracketing, splitting my incomes by percentages into different buckets makes more sense for me, but I understand how to do a budget. So if things get tight, you know how to use it, and it can really help. It just automatically kind of like forces you to not spend excess of what you have. Yeah. So for anybody that's in college or coming out, like I do recommend learning how to do a budget. You don't have to like live by it for the rest of your life, but do it for like 6 months straight and just see how that changes things. I think you can see some pretty big dividends.
Yeah. And especially, like I said, like use an app that is free and right. that like automatically does it, you know, because a lot of times you could, that fast food was kind of an emergency and like, you might not write it in, but like, if it's just not based off your credit card,
yeah, it's just right boom. There.
No, dude, this is the reality. Like you spent, you know, X amount on Red Bull and Taco Bell, you know?
Right.
And it does change the way you look at things, and you could be like, oh, we kind of do spend a lot on, you know, fast food. And when does that happen? And how do I change that behavior? You know, like I realized when I was traveling a lot for like business, like I would, for work, I'd, you know, drive and I'd always stop and get a Red Bull. I'm like, oh, dude, that's like $4. And you don't think about it at the time of that being a lot, but you know, you go to four jobs a week, it's like $20. That's just taking out a profit.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the difficult thing, and this kind of goes back to our habitual patterns of spending money. We as a culture we're really great at spending money, but we really suck at spending money, meaning like we don't spend it on the right things. We're not buying in assets. We're spending it on things that probably aren't what we would classify as essentials, but we can spend it in tremendous volumes when we're not in a recession. I think the hardest aspect for me and for people that I know that tend to be spenders, like I still consider myself a saver more than a spender, is that any purchase for the most part can sort of be justified by you, the person that purchased it. Other people will be like, that doesn't make any sense. And you will say that to somebody else. But when you buy something, you will justify that Red Bull. Like, yep. I need it. Like, I'm about to do a job. I feel like dog shit. I got to get a pep in my step. So I'm going to buy this and it's worth it. It's a business expense. I write it off. So you can do this with anything. I was just talking to one of my buddies. I spend so much time in the kitchen preparing meals. I use a chef's knife 5 times a day. I'm not even exaggerating, like 5 different times a day. Like, you know, you extrapolate that over months, I could justify spending $1,000 on a chef's knife. I could do it. I'm not going to, but like, you can do it because it's like, well, I use it all the time. So, I think you can justify things very easily. It's just a dangerous area to get into. And sometimes you need an accountability partner to be like, if you have a life partner, that helps. Hopefully they don't shame you, but like they should be able to tell you, honestly, Mike, I think this is not the right purchase for us at this time. I don't think you need a new softbox. Like, I think you're good with the 7 other that you have. So, you know, it you're going to have to put yourself in check to some degree. And if you can't do it, have somebody else just kind of nudge you along and say like, listen, you know, have some sort of goal. I think that would be my point here too, is like have financial goals. So specifically measurable goals. For instance, now is the time where it's like, hey, my credit score is this. One, if you don't know what a credit score is and how it's calculated, maybe learn that. And then what impacts that? And so if you have a goal of like, I want to raise it by year's end, now you have a goal to strive for. You know, these are great times to do that. If you have debt, can I kill off? When I was in debt, severe debt, I was doing the same thing. I was like looking at, okay, can I kill off $2,000 this quarter? And these are just random arbitrary numbers, but I was like, can I do this based off of my projected income? Now it's tough because nobody got income, but the goals I think are what can propel you forward to improve your situation.
Yeah, no, I definitely think the goals and just seeing the numbers, like once again, I was visual and just like seeing those, like, little $5-$8 purchases add up. It's just like, oh yeah, that ate away like $100 over the month. And you're like, what could I do with that $100? Yeah, buying an asset or putting in my emergency fund, you know?
I wanted to ask you about how this situation right now, presuming that people are in similar situations as yourself, as me, where our events are canceled, you know, and we're not getting as many leads overall, and we're trying to reach out, but not people are answering the call. When you do get them, how do you visualize your forward strategy for negotiations and your rates? Do you think you're going to increase them because you need more bang for your buck? Or do you think you're going to just take anything that comes your way because you're kind of in that mode of, I need just to get to work? And I can see both sides, but I'm just curious what you feel about that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question. I'm not going to take anything that's out there. You know, I think I've planned accordingly, at least now. Like, who knows if this stays on for like 2 years, then like that's a whole different situation.
Yeah.
You know, but I think, Blanca and I have made conscious decisions to like build a safety net and, you know, have some backstop and just, you know, like have ability to say no, because I think that's very important. You know, like huge. I said, if this goes on 2 or 3 years, then like that's a whole different situation.
Exactly.
But I'm going to talk with clients and be realistic with them, because like they're going through hard times too. You know, and I also think there's going to be a push of like haves and have nots. Like there's definitely going to be people that survive and people that can't, you know, and those that survive might come out stronger in this situation. So they might be looking to increase their budget, their marketing budget actually. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to take less, you know, unless what they're asking for is less, you know, like if the event isn't 500 people, it's 200 people or 100 people or smaller events.
It's like we only need you for 1 hour instead of.
Yeah. Like that, totally understandable. But coming in, if they're like trying to lowball me, I'm like, hey, like, look, like my quality of work hasn't gone down. You know, if anything, your need for quality imagery has gone up because it's been 6 months since you've had a new photo shoot, you know? So I think I'm hoping my clients that I have good repertoire with will be understanding and we'll be able to figure something out, because I do have empathy for them going through this situation, but then they're also a business, so they should respect my business as well. How about yourself?
I think that's a really good perspective to have. Mine is very similar. I don't envision myself like dropping down if somebody's saying, hey, we want to give you X and drop to our level. That's generally something that I've worked really hard at staying away from over the last few years, and it's part of the reasons why I was able to accelerate my debt killing and my growth. And in general, it's just my quality of life. I want to emphasize that too. Like if you take a lot of jobs that you kind of hate and that you feel like are paying you less or not worth your time, I think that's going to have an impact on your mentality, mm-hmm. just knowing from personal experience. So I try to avoid those situations. To your point exactly, if this goes on for 3 years, then I may not have a choice, right? Like there's going to be a breaking point where it's like, okay, I'm going to have to take this, you know, job for less. But in the immediate short term, I built up enough of a kind of an emergency fund to sustain for the entire year, knowing that I was not going to make a dollar. And hopefully I don't drain the entirety of it. Hopefully that there will be some things coming up in the fall in Q3 and Q4, but you know, you're just kind of aware of what your situation is. But I do think that I'm going to stay closer to what my asking price is. And I still have the philosophy of raising rates. And I don't think that's going to change either. But I might show flexibility depending on the relationship with the client.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of my clients are educational and school-based. And right now there's no tax revenue coming in. So like, I understand that like their budgets are going to be shut or cut, you know?
Yeah. And if for me personally, if I'm doing, you know, kind of B2C, if I'm doing, you know, people that are like, hey, we have an engagement, would you do our shoots? I'm going to be more flexible with them than I would be with a marketing budget.
Yeah.
You know, cause these are just a couple people that aren't going to, you know, license these images out. They just want their own personal photos. So I would be more accommodating to them.
Yeah. So I think this is like a good spot to kind of start wrapping things up. So Mike, do you have any last 2 cents, closing thoughts?
Well, I suppose the biggest thing is kind of harking back onto just empower yourself, like educate yourself, view it, you know, this world as the financial crisis is your own personal literacy. You know, so if you can fix that, I think you can take tremendous actions going forward. Don't worry about what's going to happen in politics. It can all help you, it can hurt you, but like, you know, what you do is going to be the biggest driving force of going forward. So, but you can do it.
Yeah. And I'm going to hop in on that is this isn't the first crisis. It's not going to be the last crisis. So if you have the time, you know, like you said, educate yourself. I've really tried to broaden my financial horizons and not just focus on my like right in front of me business. But yeah, just take the time to read YouTube, you know, all those things. But with that being said, let's just wrap things up. I think everybody that's listened on Spotify or Apple iTunes, go check us out on YouTube, link in the description below. Thank you for making it this far. Don't forget to find us on Instagram at Media1099Podcast. Don't forget our website, media1099.com. I'm Robert Husky here with Michael Durr, knocking something off our checklist and creating a YouTube video. We will catch you on the next episode.